Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined by Panda Haddon to discuss the 2014 adaptation, A Good Marriage. Panda, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really great. Very excited to be joining you today.
You know, this is one that I don't think I even realized got adapted until I did this list, because it's not that it's a TV movie, but it just kind of flew under the radar because I don't think it's one of King's more well-known stories. And for anyone who didn't catch the Full Dark No Stars episode, that is where this story comes from. But for you, what is your experience like with this movie? Was it one you had seen before signing up for it, or was it something that was entirely new to you?
It was actually something that was entirely new to me. Usually I tend to stick to kind of the horror fantasy things, but I thought it would be a nice change of pace. And you know what, honestly, admittedly, I was ready to write it off as like a Lifetime movie via Stephen King. but I felt that it kind of flipped the script on what you originally expect of the story, in a nice way.
I think it's safe to say that even though the subject matter of this story and movie are pretty brutal, the movie itself didn't really come across that way. It's not like our main characters ever really felt larger than life in the same way that, you know, maybe Jack Nicholson as Jack Torrance does, or Pennywise, either, you know, the Bill Skarsgård or Tim Curry version, honestly. But instead, this felt like a very grounded and real story because it didn't have that added element of, you know, like sci-fi or magic or anything like that.
Yeah, I found this to be realistic on so many levels, not only just the story itself, as I believe King has said that it was based off of the BTK killer.
Yes.
But the fact that the couple felt so realistic for their ages, like they're very well established, they're clearly comfortable and also very catty with one another, which is, you know, kind of a nice thing to see. And I think they definitely, that he cemented it in the novella too, because, you know, we see the details of their life through that. And then also just Darcy's thought process through her discovery in the first portion of the movie and the decisions that she has to make. But it feels so real, like it hits really close to home, a very, well, what would you do in this situation? Because it's not just you'll be a hero because you out somebody for doing a bad thing. There are repercussions to that. And I think that's what makes this movie so interesting, despite it initially coming off as a obvious wife slasher kind of assumption movie.
Yeah, and I love to talk about the cast when I do the movie episodes in particular, and obviously the TV stuff too, but because this is such a small cast, you know, you have Joan Allen as Darcy Anderson, Anthony LaPaglia as Bob Anderson, Stephen Lang as Holt Ramsey, Cara Buono as Betty Pike, and then you kind of have everyone else is just a character that is kind of there, but doesn't really have a super important role. I mean, Kristen Connolly plays their daughter Petra, and she gets married, and if I remember correctly, that part wasn't really as big of a deal, if it was even in the story at all.
Yeah, it was briefly mentioned, and it was used as a part of Darcy's lie when she didn't answer the phone.
Got it, yeah.
But no, it doesn't really matter as much.
I don't think we actually got to like this whole big wedding scene or anything like that. It was more in passing.
Yeah. Which, because the story, like the main focus of it is their marriage and what that means. And though like their family is a part of it, it's not necessarily the focus.
Yeah. And then you have, you know, the random Mike O'Malley appearance a couple of times throughout this. And you're just like, this is so strange, because he's always felt like a more comedic actor to me.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I think this was fairly well cast. I think a lot of what I didn't necessarily like about it, not necessarily even had to do with the story, but it's just the fact that in the novella, you get so much of Darcy's thought process and her planning. And in the movie, you can't really have those things happen unless you have her having a conversation with herself at this point with this kind of story. And it just felt like something was missing from the story. And I think that was a big chunk of it.
Yeah. And I know that they tried to make up for some of the things with more of the notes to try and have that element of thought, but it ended up kind of souring the relationship a little bit because it really made Darcy feel even more like a weaker housewife, which in terms of female characters, I thought Darcy was really good compared to some of King's previous female characters, just because emotionally she and Bob are on such equal footing and so much of their life is about giving back and forth. Like, usually it doesn't feel like bullying between them except in those notes. And I understand why they're needed, but it felt so overboard and we couldn't get that experience like we were messaging about when setting this up. Unlike other smaller cast things that King has done, there's not really an atmospheric element to this that makes up for that lack of thought we get to hear.
Yeah, especially because a lot of the scenes have Darcy by herself in the house, and then they kind of try to fill that in with her imagining that Bob has come home early, and they play out all these different scenarios that are basically only happening in her head, but that doesn't have anything to do with her planning, really. It's more of a what-if situation, and we don't really know what she's going to do. I mean, you and I knew what she was going to do, but anyone watching this movie as just the movie without knowing the backstory, they aren't going to necessarily grasp what is going through her mind if they don't have that reference to the source material.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. So much of this movie is, sometimes it feels like things are laid completely out for you, and then other times it feels as if things are completely missing. We really are missing so much when we don't get to hear those thoughts from her as to how she decides things. And at one point, they do have Bob, like, say things out loud, like what she was probably actually thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same. It makes her out to be kind of dumb, or that it makes the audience feel dumb.
Right. In the story, she felt like a much more powerful character.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that was a downside too, because it was kind of like, oh, she stays home and does the coin collecting thing and selling those through like a online marketplace or something like that. And it felt like everything that I really loved about the character was set aside in this movie. And I don't think it's like an absolutely terrible movie. I think it's watchable, but it wasn't as thrilling as I expected it to be.
And it's really disappointing because Stephen King actually did write the screenplay for this.
Right.
Which is why I think the parts of it that really shined were the portions with Detective Holt, because you can tell mm-hmm. they let him keep the very Stephen King dialogue in that character.
Yeah, let's talk about him a little bit, because we mentioned how small this cast is, and he kind of just spends a lot of time looking on, and we don't learn anything about him. It's kind of obvious that he's some sort of private investigator or detective or something, and we do learn that he's a retired cop, basically. And I really felt like they did a nice job of adding mystery to that character. They did change a lot in the end when they had him in the hospital, because from what I could tell, that wasn't how that played out in the story. And, you know, I have been reading through these things so quickly that it's really hard to keep everything straight. So I was kind of like reading the Wikipedia for the novella while I was watching the movie. And I was like, okay, I did remember this part correctly.
Yeah. And the thing that I did like best about him is he was just acted so well. And honestly, I think the cast, like the main cast as a whole, acted their hearts out in this and definitely seemed to have a lot of fun with it. But him in particular, mostly because he actually got to do the main accent, which has been held closely in my heart ever since seeing Pet Sematary 1989. And it was just a nice piece in this movie. But for him as a character, they seem to imply that the secret would die with him, aside from the fact that Darcy would have to, you know, carry forward with what she had done to Bob. When it seems like in the novella, it was just a, like, you did the right thing, that's that, and it's not this whole, it's going to die with him.
The kids felt like they were less of the story as well in the novella than they were here, because, you know, even though they weren't huge players in the grand scheme of things, they just kept showing up, you know?
And at the same time, like, they did try to make them more a part of things. It's like they tried to simultaneously dump the kids away while also including them more. That detail of the box that contains the murder victim ID. In the novella, it's a present from Darcy. It's more centered on their marriage, but then they changed it in the movie to be a present from the daughter.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where even when Stephen King is the one writing the screenplay, he's aware that you do have to change things up for screen adaptations, whether it's big screen or small screen. But I think it's just not quite his forte, because to me, King really shines when he gets to get down into the nitty-gritty details of his stories. Mm-hmm. And that is a lot harder to do in a visual form like this.
So much of King's writing is based on inner thought, which is beautiful to read, and it tells you so much about the characters, but it is so hard to portray because there's no way to do it without narration, and that doesn't always feel appropriate for movies, especially something like this.
Yeah, and because they added all of these elements, you kind of think they're going to play a bigger role, and then you're like, oh, okay, they had kids.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to see glimpses of, like, well, maybe Bob wasn't, you know, completely quiet, because we have a moment after his funeral where the son makes a very sexually aggressive remark about another woman at the funeral, and immediately Darcy is on it and telling him not to say that. And it's like we get this hint that maybe he had that influence over his children in a way that she didn't know, but then it never comes back and we never see anything else of that.
Yeah, I wish they would have dug a little deeper into how Bob would send back the license and send the note and all of these things, because they get into it a little bit, but with a serial killer like this, that's something in real life that a lot of time is spent on.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many questions. And like I said, I understand that at its core, this is a story that is about a relationship, and that the crimes that happen outside of it are only just a catalyst for, you know, the problems that it caused. And I don't know, I think, because I want to like this because there are things that I definitely like about it. But that TV movie feel where, even though this movie is like an hour and 40 minutes long.
Yeah.
But it feels like there's so much missing. And so, like, it leaves it very unsatisfying.
Right. I just felt like they needed to really ramp this up to 11 for it to work. And so much of it is kind of this somber tone. And you're just kind of like, okay, you know, there's a woman home alone and she keeps hearing noises. And it felt a little slow and boring at times, which I think it didn't capture the same tension that the story did, and that's why.
Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is, I know we've repeated it multiple times, but the thoughts, because Darcy in the novella, her thoughts are racing, like, no, this is stupid, I can't do this, or no, you're stupid because you're not doing anything. Like, she has this inner turmoil about this, and we don't get to see it. We only get to see you know, the facial expressions, the fantasies of what she thinks may or may not happen, and it falls flat.
Those thoughts in the story add this element of adrenaline too, because your thoughts start racing with hers and you're like, okay, you know, how is this going to play out? What's going to happen? Is she going to make this plan work? And you're kind of running through the motions with her as well. And in this, it just felt like she was upset, but not actively trying to figure out what to do.
And in the end, I feel this one, it leaned into that Lifetime-esque ending of like woman power, because she goes through ignoring his notes and learning to park her car in the garage, all while dealing with the traumatic fact that her husband is a murderer. And it felt so out of place and very strange.
Yeah, I think this is one that doesn't get talked about a lot, and it's very clear why after watching it. And I think a lot of people just don't really know about this one, to be honest.
No, and the thing that surprised me most about it is this came out in 2014, but it feels like a movie that probably came out in maybe 2006.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but this very much feels like a movie that I would go with my grandmother to see just because of that husband-wife story, but it's about wife empowerment. You know, I will say that I did appreciate the script flip in that it starts out and I thought, oh, wow, they're giving away everything. Like, it's really obvious that her husband is the killer. Because I went into it blind, not knowing anything about it. And then when she immediately found out who he was, what he was doing, and then the story wasn't about, you know, her trying to survive him, but about morally, what do you do when someone you care about is a monster? That element of it, I thought, was really interesting. And I wish we could have kept on track with that.
Yeah, because he was like asking for a second chance and lying through his teeth the whole time still. And it really felt like that just kind of got glossed over, because then next thing you know, they're at the daughter's wedding.
Mm-hmm. And then it's, you know, the back to things as usual. I did appreciate that at least we did get one action scene in the entire movie, though it is at almost the very end of the film. Because the crimes throughout, we get some details of them, but we don't see them, which makes sense because it's not about the crimes, it's about the aftermath. But it's such a slow run that it can be hard to get through. So you really have to be into this kind of story to, I don't know if I would say appreciate this movie, but get a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, there are a few more things I want to touch on. And one is the fact that he was crying before he killed one of his victims. And I thought that was a very interesting look at his character. But again, it was something that didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, I think we see that at least twice, where he's got tears running down his face. And he gives a brief explanation as to how this whole thing started back with his best friend and him having this urge to kill. But then we see him doing the crying, and then we also see him saying, well, it's this other thing inside me and I have to do it. And we never see that sad emotional part of it ever again outside of those scenes leading to him preparing to murder someone.
Yeah, I think there were some things they could do too to just kind of ramp up that tension, because there's another scene where he's outside like trimming one of the bushes or something, and the neighbor comes home from tennis practice or what, you know, her tennis session, and he's very clearly staring at her, and she notices that he's staring at her. And I feel like they should have gone into that a little more, like have him creeping around her house at night or something, because they were neighbors. It's not like they had to go very far to do that.
And that character actually continues to lend to the female empowerment part of it, because at the wedding, which this is very awkward and I feel almost the most unrealistic thing in the movie, at the wedding, that neighbor comes up to Darcy and says, hey, your husband's been looking at me. I've not been encouraging it, but just so you know, it's a thing. And I mean, great on you for actually saying something.
But what
why
timing?
Why would you do that at a wedding? It's leaning back to that Lifetime movie TV feel. So I don't really know what King was thinking with putting that in, or I don't recall if that was in the original story or not, but it felt very shoehorned.
And she was so quick to believe Darcy, who is supposedly her best friend, that everything was fine. And it's like, no, it clearly wasn't. And you would think someone who is someone's best friend would, you know, push back on that a little more. So I think there were just too many things that were off with this. And it's not to say that I hated this movie. Again, totally watchable movie. But do you have anything else you want to bring up from particular moments?
I do want to go back to the action scene. It at least felt satisfying in that we did get an end to it. And it was different in that so often when we see female killers or situations where women have to defend themselves, that either it's a woman killing by poisoning, but Darcy does get very physical and she plans out her you know, plan very well. Just the immediately coming for Bob, shoving him, and then being prepared to suffocate him when he did not go down without a fight. I did appreciate seeing that kind of strong element, and that's something I always want to see from King is those stronger characters, but I think he tried a little too hard in the other elements of this movie outside of this.
That moment too, it was like they were finally recognizing that Darcy is an intelligent character.
Mm-hmm.
Because earlier you have Bob running through the list of all the things she did wrong, didn't clear the search history, didn't do this, didn't do that, ate too many Tootsie Rolls. And it's like, you know what? No, this woman is actually very smart because we see her put like the dish towel in a plastic bag. And even though the bag breaks, she's obviously thought this through enough to where she's like, I'm not going to get caught doing this.
When she put that bag in the fridge around the meat, genius. I thought that was one of the, as a true crime lover, that was a beautiful moment just to see the cleanup process of that.
Yeah.
That was honestly a very well done, very well written, very well acted scene. And afterwards, you know, we do get the ending of her continuing that powerful life without Bob. And in the novella, I think we get more of a sense that she understands that Bob wasn't as smart as he acted like he was, and that he was actually very close to being caught, like even outside of Detective Hold.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I was like, why couldn't you have written the character like this the whole time?
Exactly. Like the middle portion of the movie just really sunk down because... You know, the beginning starts with that, okay, we're doing something a little bit different here with this usual kind of formula. And then it drags through the middle until we get to that plan at the very end.
Yeah, I think this was one that if you haven't read the source material, maybe you would like it a little better than we both did. But otherwise, I think the novella is definitely worth reading more than this is worth watching. And that's not to say you shouldn't watch this if you haven't seen it or didn't even know it existed until now. But, you know, we've obviously kind of spoiled everything. But I like to do ratings on these. And I don't think I actually logged this one in Letterboxd after I watched it last night, because sometimes I just forget to do that. But I would probably put this at like a 2.5. There were things I enjoyed, but I think the source material is just better, which, you know, that happens. It's fine.
I'm going to go ahead and completely agree with that. 2.5. The novella is definitely very good. It's a quick read and you can find it in quite a few places. If you do have a mother or aunt or grandmother who is into the kind of lifetime strong woman getting away from her husband trope, this is definitely a movie I would suggest for them. So if you want to have that kind of night with your family, I think this would be a good movie for it.
I did watch this with my mom, as a matter of fact.
See?
Well, I think that is about all we have to say about A Good Marriage. It was not very good, as the title might lead you to believe. But Panda, thank you so much for joining me. It was fun getting to talk about this one. I know some of these episodes are a little shorter just because sometimes there's only so much you can say.
Exactly. Well, thank you for having me. I have had a wonderful time and look forward to hearing more from your podcast and hopefully joining in the future.
Yes, of course. You are certainly welcome back on. And I know I'm kind of closing in on having all of the episodes filled up with guests and everything, but I look forward to talking to you again soon. All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.